Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome everyone. One of the interesting things we're told is that in the future, some of our celebrations will be dwarfed by the future redemption, future miracles. But there's something special about Purim that will never disappear. And Purim is different than other holidays in that in the time of Purim, there was something special that happened. That it seems that the fear that people had, they wanted to give up being Jews, they wanted to give up the danger of Haman and the anti-Semitism, and something happened over Purim that the opposite happened. That not only didn't they give up, but Purim inspired them to celebrate their Judaism and to live a Jewish life in a much greater way than anything until then that had happened. And so even though throughout our history we've been saved from many Hamans, sometimes we've been partially saved, but Purim stands out. There's something unique about it. And so then the question is, how do you do Purim? And this is one of the things that's a shame, and that is that people kind of assume that Purim is just for kids. You know, and it is for children. It's definitely something that children enjoy. But there's nothing about Purim that's not for adults as well. And in fact, it's one of the few holidays that we're supposed to enjoy ourselves. In other words, by some of the holidays, you know, if you like eating matzah, you don't like eating matzah. If you like fasting, you don't like fasting. You do what you're supposed to do. By Purim, there's a specific mitzvah to do things that bring you joy. And therefore, you can choose, to some extent, if you have something that you enjoy doing, schedule it for Purim. And it's a mitzvah. And so the question is, what are the mitzvahs of Purim, and what's unique about it? So there's a few things. The first thing that we have on Purim is the half coin, the half dollar coin, called the half shekel coin. And that's an ancient custom. It goes back over 2,000 years, which is on the day before Purim, we give a half dollar to charity. Where does that come from? That comes from the biblical command that each and every Jew had to give a half coin to charity. What they do in the synagogue is they have a silver dollar there, and if you didn't bring one, you can just pick it up, and the synagogue will give it to you to do the mitzvah, and you can just put your change in and then, you know, do the mitzvah with that. Why do you think they have you give a half dollar? Now, wouldn't you rather just give a whole dollar if you're giving? What's the significance of a half dollar? Right. Okay. Well, one of the things was that was how they counted the people, was by giving the dollar. But that shows something special, that they didn't want to, in Judaism, we don't number people. People aren't statistics. They're not just number 1, 2, 3, 4, but each person is unique. And so when they counted people, they had them given a half shekel so that we wouldn't just count everybody as a statistic. But why a half? Shouldn't we just give a whole? Yeah. There's an idea that we on our own are only half. It's only when we give together with others that we're whole. It's only when we see ourselves together with others that we're whole. And that's the way we're supposed to see it. And there's an interesting rule by the half shekel. If somebody wants to give more, we don't let. But you never heard that one. You try to give too much? Sorry, we know donations accepted, right? But by the half shekel. And what we're going to see, I'll get to the punchline, and it's very interesting. And that is, all of the mitzvahs of Purim have to do with friendship and closeness to our fellow Jews. All of the mitzvahs of Purim have to do with that. And starting with the half shekel, which is where we all join in together, and each and every one of us, and the greatest of us and the wealthy of us can only give a half, and the least of us gives a half. We're all equal in the eyes of the Almighty, but on our own, we're only half. It's only when we combine it together with the others that it's a whole. Now, how do I know that all the mitzvahs of Purim are about brotherhood and about peace and about getting together? So, it goes to the Megillah itself. In the Megillah, Haman says to Ahasuerus, you know, we can wipe out the Jews. You know why? Because they're scattered. They're not united. Everybody does their own thing. They don't take care of one another. They're scattered. So what is the first thing that Mordechai says we should do in the Megillah? Gather everybody together. Let's all get on the same page. And we have a tradition that when Jews get together, when we can agree on something, very special things happen. It's only happened a few times in our history. You know, they say two Jews and three opinions, or two Jews and three shuls. The first thing that Mordechai did and Esther was that they gathered everybody together. And at the end of the Megillah, when they were trying to decide whether to celebrate the holiday, so now it's interesting, Esther was the one that, she was the queen, I guess she had the most influence, and so she sent out letters to the people, and this is what it says. It says, she sent out letters to the Jews in all of the 127 kingdoms to celebrate the holiday of Purim, divrei shalom ve'emes, words of peace. In other words, the celebration of Purim is a celebration of peace, of getting everybody together. So let's talk about what the mitzvahs of Purim are. So we said that the day before Purim, we start off by giving charity, which is a half dollar coin. And again, if you don't have a half dollar, you can just put some money in the pushkin. Generally, the synagogue will have like a half dollar that you can pick up to do the mitzvah. And that reminds us that we are only together when we're part of the community. Now, on Purim itself, there's a few mitzvahs. The first one is the reading of the Megillah. That's the Megillah to Esther. And we read that at night, and we read that during the day. What is the theme of the Megillah? That's what we're talking about. The theme of the Megillah was that if we are scattered and we don't work together, then our enemies can defeat us. But if we bring everybody together, then nobody can defeat us. And that somewhat is the theme of Purim. There's another theme of Purim also as well, and that's the theme of joy. There's an idea that when we come to the month of Purim, we're supposed to try to be happier. We're supposed to increase our joy. And there's an idea that on Purim, things look very bad, and they change in a moment's notice. In other words, even though Haman made his decree, and he was the most powerful person in the country, and it looked like it was sealed with the king's ring, and it looked like there was no hope, next thing we knew, Haman was hanging from the tree. And so the idea of Purim is that sometimes things seem very bad, but they can change in a moment's notice. Therefore, the message of Purim is to be happy. It's not worth, life isn't worth being sad. It's not worth all the aggravation we go through, because things change, and they can change in a moment's notice. And so what good does it do to sit there and worry about it? It's not in our hands. It's in the hands of the Almighty. And that joy, if a person... people make enemies because they feel that somebody's infringing on a person, that they're on that other person's turf, or they don't like what that other person does. But when that person realizes that the Almighty is in control, there's no reason to fight. There's no reason to... if a person is happy with himself, then he doesn't fight with other people. And so the part of the message of Purim and the Megillah is the joy. The mitzvahs that we have on Purim, number one is to give what's called shaloch manas, which is to send gifts to other people. And it's brought down that if you have a neighbor who maybe you had a little bit of a run-in with, that it's a special mitzvah to give him shaloch manas, to send him a gift of... and shaloch manas usually is some kind of food. And we have a tradition that goes... You know, everybody knows about Jews and food, but it goes all the way back to Avraham and Sarah, that when a person eats together in friendship, that creates something special. We don't believe that food is unholy. We make food holy. We make kiddush over it. And so on Purim, we make little things of food and we send them to our friends, and also to people who we want them to be our friends. We want to give like a token of our friendship to people. And that's the mitzvah of shaloch manas. The most famous shaloch manas is homentashen. Anybody know where the custom to have homentashen comes from? Well, the name homentashen comes from Haman. And supposedly he wore a triangular hat. We want to remember the fact that we defeated Haman, and so we use the shape of it as a triangle. But what about the flavor? Where did that come from? The different... So it's very interesting. We have a tradition that Esther kept kosher in the palace, in Ahasuerus's palace, because they slaughtered pigs and they had all kinds of royal banquets. And basically what she ate were seeds, like poppy seed and different kinds of seeds. And that's why the custom is to make homentashen from seeds. They're like the fruit fillings that they have are in order to remember the vegetarian, she could have eaten like a queen. She could have had all kinds of food. And yet, while she was in the palace, She was a vegetarian. She stuck to the seeds. And so when we have our home and fashion, today they make them out of chocolate and all kinds. But the old-fashioned way was to pick the seeds, like a poppy seed or other kinds of things. Prune or, you know, like some different kinds of fruits and things that, because that's all she could have eaten in the palace. And I haven't seen it mentioned, but it mentions the seeds. It mentions the fact that that Esther and Daniel, who both were in Babylonia in the courts of the kings, that they stuck to a vegetarian diet. And the interesting thing is, by Daniel, it says that they made sure that people were in good shape. And even though he ate vegetarian, he was healthier than the other officers of the king. So that's a big plug for being a vegetarian, or at least when it comes to that kind of meal. But the custom is to send gifts of friendship, and that's the Shalach Manas. And then also the custom is to take care of the poor. There are people who can't afford to give. And so on Purim, the custom is to send what Matanos Levyonim, the presents to the poor, to think about people that are needy, that may need something. There also is an idea that it's very interesting, and that is usually we're supposed to be careful. We have limited amounts of charity that we give. And there are rules as to who you give to. So you try to find the most needy. You try to see if you can give in a way that's dignified to the person. You try to, if you can help them, teach them a trade. If they have medical needs, you try to. There are different rules about how to give and who to give to. On Purim, the rule is we're not supposed to. We give to whoever asks. And there's an idea that we maybe weren't so worthy of redemption at that time. We had a lot of things were very difficult for a lot of the Jews. In fact, some of the Jews went to the big party of Achashverosh that he made, where everybody got drunk. And we perhaps weren't worthy of such great things at that time. But Hashem gave just because we asked. And so the custom on Purim is that even though the rest of the year somebody comes to our door and asks for help, or if we try to help someone, we try to find out, you know, are they really worthy? Do they really need? Does anybody know them on Purim? Anybody who asks, the custom is to give a lot. But the idea is that on Purim, God answered us without looking too carefully at us. He said to us, you're all asking. When the Jewish people get together, that's the secret. When we get together, when we care about one another, He won't refuse us. And that's the message of these mitzvahs, of the giving of the food gifts and of giving the presents to the poor, and also giving the half shekel coin. They all really amount to this idea of getting everybody together, being one. Now, the only question is, where does the poor come in? What does the word poor mean? Anybody know what the word poor means? That means a lottery. So usually, the name of the festival has to do with the festival. Right? Passover means, you know, God passed over our houses and saved our lives and struck the Egyptians down, or Sukkot, we dwelt in the special huts that Hashem made. What does the name Purim have to do with the holiday? Here we're saying the holiday is to celebrate the togetherness and the defeat of Haman. Purim is just the name of the lottery that Haman threw when he wanted to decide which day to attack the Jews. So it says he threw a lottery. He threw a dice. That's what a pur is. It's like a dice. So why would that be chosen as the name of the holiday? Anybody have a theory about that? Say what? That's correct. That's correct. In other words, I think maybe what he's saying is that Haman thought that if he was a lucky man, and if he threw the dice, that would be the good time to kill the Jews. And in the end, because he threw the dice and they allowed, it came out much later in the year, that allowed time for Haman to be deposed and to recall all of his decrees. And so the same lottery that he thought was his good luck and was his ability to come against us was really Hashem manipulating things behind the scenes. And so he assumed that it was a pur, which meant that it was a lottery, which means that there's nobody in charge. And on Purim, we learn an important lesson that really there is somebody in charge. You know, here we thought, you know, what were the chances of having a Jewish girl in the palace? You know, but Hashem arranged the whole thing to be right in place for us. And we know the story that when the guards were plotting to kill the king, who happened to overhear the plot? Mordechai. What's the chances of the rabbi being the one that saved the king's life? Right? But all of the details Hashem put into place to show us that he was the that he was in charge. And so when we celebrate Purim, we celebrate this idea that it may seem like there's a lottery, it may seem random, but really, like you said, like Einstein said, that Hashem doesn't roll the dice. He's behind the scenes, and he's doing all of these things. And so ultimately the theme of Purim is to just to put everything together, is that we seek to unite as Jews. And again, people that aren't aware of this, they just think, you know, you dress up and you get drunk, and you know, the most important thing you can do is, if you have somebody who used to be a good friend of yours who isn't, or who you want to make friendship to, is to find a way to reach out to them or to help them. That would be the most, and part of that combination goes with the joy of knowing that when we as Jews reach out to one another, then we find favor into Hashem, in Hashem's eyes. And then he'll answer our prayers, and things can change around just the same way they did for Purim, and hopefully they'll do so for us. That's correct. Well, and Esther, the name Esther means hidden. And so sometimes there's an idea that God is there, but you have to look for him. Some people say when it says the king, it's referring to him. In other words, even though it says the king, we think it says the king down here, but the king down here is just a pawn in Hashem's hands. That's that idea. But that's a thought for another lecture. Thank you. Everybody have a happy Purim.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.